Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.
Welcome back to the show. On August the 14th, 2013, almost 3 years ago, Egyptian security forces killed at least 817 people and probably more than 1,000. Nobody knows exactly how many died. These people were in Cairo's Rabah al-Adawiyah Square protesting the military's removal of former President Mohamed Morsi and is regarded as one of the worst mass killings in Egyptian history. The dispersal at Rabah and several other mass killings of protesters in 2013 probably amounted to crimes against humanity. But in the 3 years since, the Egyptian authorities have held no one accountable and the United Nations has taken little action. Online is Ahmad Ben Kemsi, who is Communications and Advocacy Director, Middle East and North Africa for Human Rights Watch. Ahmad, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's amazing to think that it's 3 years since what happened in Rabah al-Adawiyah Square. It's almost 3 years. A lot of people were killed. Some of us saw the footage. Some of us have spoken to people who were there. Very little has come out of it. A bit of a tragedy, isn't it? Because surely the victims should have had some kind of restitution by now.
Absolutely. It's been 3 years now, and the Egyptian government hasn't prosecuted anyone for this massacre, which we in Human Rights Watch called one of the, actually the worst massacre of unarmed civilians in one single day in all of contemporary history. It's about 1,000 people, probably more, and we documented that it was not just a situation going out of control. It was carefully planned. I mean, the report we produced on the Rabah massacre, the title of the report was All According to Plan. And the authorities said that they targeted those people on purpose. Even the Minister of Interior at that time, he said something that we found was absolutely incredible. He said, we were expecting more casualties. I mean, more than 1,000? Really? That's just incredible. And that's how the Egyptian authorities handled this situation. And yet, so far, no one has been prosecuted for the responsibility of this massacre. And on the other hand, 400 people who were present in Rabah Square and other squares at that same day are being sued in a mass trial for breaching the state's security.
Yeah, it's totally ironic, isn't it? And at this radio station, we've also spoken to people who were there, and they've assured us, as the Human Rights Watch report does, that there was no aggression on the side of the people who were occupying the square whatsoever, that any aggression came at that stage from the state.
Well, there were some very limited numbers of protesters who apparently had guns or weapons, but it's really a very small number. And in any case, I mean, subduing these tiny minority in any case does never justify shooting at masses of people. I mean, there were about 50,000 people in Rabah Square, and about 1,000 were killed. What happened is that the army surrounded the square with heavy weaponry and even snipers on the roofs, and they started shooting on everybody. And there was no safe exit. There was an exit, thank God, otherwise the toll would have been bigger, but there was no safe exit. And people were just being shot at almost randomly.
Now, 3 years on, even one of your reports indicates, is there hope that there is going to be some kind of transitional justice law being passed by the Egyptian authorities? We've seen kind of approaches to certain people, but nothing happening. Is there any chance of transitional justice being implemented here?
Well, I don't know if there's hope or chances. What I know is that the constitution of Egypt says that the parliament is compelled, has to pass a law of transitional justice before the end of its first session. Now, the new parliament in Egypt has been in session starting, started its legislature in last January, and it will end in October. So there is a few months left for the representatives to do their constitutional duty and pass that law. However, nothing happened so far. I mean, there were a couple of versions of the law that circulated, and some of them including provisions that talk about reconciliation with the Muslim Brotherhood, but a big number of MPs rejected it on the ground that they would never reconcile with the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Minister of Transitional Justice, because there's such a thing in Egypt, there's a minister specifically tasked with passing that law and dealing with transitional justice, he said that the opposition to this law among MPs was so strong that he could not propose a project law. Now, there has been some very troubling information, including an information published by the Huffington Post Arabic, that said that MPs were receiving instructions from Egyptian secret services to oppose that law. So we can wonder whether the state wants this law to pass or not.
Yeah, that's an open question, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
Now, isn't that, again, perhaps a sign that there is something to hide if what you've been told is true, that intelligence services have been whispering in the ears of parliamentarians, don't pass this law? Surely there's something to hide. I mean, the report that you brought out after the Rabaa massacre indicates quite eloquently that there is something to hide in terms of what the state did on that day.
Well, it's even worse than that. It's not even hiding, because as I told you, the Minister of Interior of Egypt back then said publicly that he was expecting a bigger toll. What does that mean? It means that they kind of assume the responsibility of what happened. But that's what he said 3 years ago. Now the situation has been changed, and maybe those information that we got, and including this one published by the Huffington Post about secret services whispering in the ear of MPs, indicates that the state is not feeling, that the government is not feeling as confident about this tragedy that he used to be a couple of years ago. So there might be a little bit of change of perception. They might start to realize that what happened is a crime against humanity, or looks very much as a crime against humanity, and they're probably looking to evade responsibility and to evade accountability.
And of course, I mean, it opens up a number of questions surrounding the whole incident, doesn't it? That you mentioned that there, some people, in fact, who were at the square have been persecuted by the state. Some of them are in prison. Some of them are facing court cases and all that kind of stuff. One would think that maybe now would be the time to sort of step out and retain some dignity on behalf of the security forces, because I'm sure you'll agree that if these court cases go on and on like they are, what credibility, what political credibility is Egypt going to enjoy when it carries on passing the death sentence upon people for what appear to be very spurious charges?
Well, if it was only that, but it's even way worse. I mean, as if that was not enough, Egypt has slipped back to dictatorship in a very clear fashion since the overthrow of President Morsi from the Muslim Brotherhood. We have some very, very troubling data beyond the Rabaa massacre and beyond what we documented about various aspects of civil and political life in Egypt. Let's talk about press freedom, for example. The CPJ, which is an American group for the defense of journalism, says that in 2015, Egypt was the second worst country in the world in terms of suppressing free speech. Reporters Without Borders listed Egypt at position 159 out of 180 countries in the world in terms of obstacles put to freedom of the press. The law, the anti-terrorism law, is an absolute freedom-suppressing law. I mean, imagine with me, as a journalist, if you were Egyptian, you would not be able to cover terrorist acts. I mean, the only way that you would be allowed to cover terrorist acts is if you back the version of the Ministry of Defense. If you write anything that is not consistent with what the Minister of Defense wants you to write, you get stopped from being a journalist and you get fined by the force of law. So that's only freedom of the press. Now, we're not talking about enforced disappearances of people who disappeared by the thousands really, 7,400 military trials of civilians since a decree brought by President Sisi broadened the scope of military trials, and I could go on and on. Torture is happening at a very large scale. The space for civilian dissent has shrunk dramatically in Egypt. So if there is something to hide, it unfortunately goes beyond Rabaa, but it concerns the whole human rights situation in the country.
So where does one go from here? Because you know, normally when a state ends up taking such repressive action, it's like a pressure cooker. You know, the lid is on, but the pressure builds. It's going to burst sometime, or isn't it? I mean, this situation can't sustain itself forever.
Absolutely, it cannot. It cannot. Well, just think of something. I mean, the revolution, when it happened in Egypt in 2011, when the former President Hosni Mubarak was taken down, the situation was not as bad as it is right now. I mean, it was pretty bad, and it prompted people to take the streets and to bring the president down. Now the situation is way worse on many aspects. So I agree with you. This is not sustainable, and it won't last forever.
Do you think that the average Egyptian in the street is beginning to realize, in terms of human rights, what is going on? I mean, they must be blind if they can't. But I mean, what we've been detecting from a distance is there was a lot of hysteria when Sisi took power, and obviously the people of Egypt had got very angry with the Muslim Brotherhood at that stage. But what's the feeling right now in the streets of Cairo, Alexandria, and all the other centers in Egypt?
Well, what you call hysteria has receded. I mean, I see what you mean. There was a lot of support for Sisi after the coup, sometimes in a very extravagant way, people getting all riled up and asking for debt for Muslim Brotherhood members. This general state of white heat, I would say, has receded. It's not like this anymore. It's interesting, for example, since we started talking about Rabaa, to observe the reactions of people on social media. Unfortunately, there are no opinion polls on which we could rely to measure the state of Egyptian public opinion. But if we look at social media as a benchmark, for example, well, a lot of people who were either finding excuses for the government for the Rabaa massacre, or not even saying anything, this year are publishing interesting messages, including activists who somehow backed the government or at least were anti-Muslim Brotherhood. Now they're, if not expressing regret, at least saying, well, we should investigate. You know, what happened is not normal. So there is something of a shift within the Egyptian public opinion, even though, of course, such things cannot be measured with any level of precision.
That should be, I should imagine, cause for concern for Sisi, who must be in quite a difficult place right now. He has to deliver something, and you know, you can't, as we just said, you can't carry on ruling in the suppressive fashion forever, because everything in that whole society is going to suffer at the end of it, the economy, morale, everything else besides.
Well, I don't have precise numbers on the state of the economy. What I know is that the Sisi government resorts a lot to money from Gulf funders to sustain his, you know, the economic activities of the government. And this as well cannot last forever. The economic recovery that he didn't even promise an economic recovery, but he basically promised that things will go back on track. Well, we don't see much progress, and what we see is the situation of the public freedoms has gone dramatically worse.
To get back to the massacre at Rabaa, how much memory is there of it in Egypt? I mean, do people talk about it, or because of the situation, are they just quiet and it's just something that just sits and simmers there?
Well, we're in 2016, in an era where social media and satellite channels broadcasting from outside of Egypt cannot be silenced that easily. So Egyptians know what happened. I mean, they might not speak about it a lot in local media because there might be a backlash, and because you know, the situation of freedom of the press being what it is, a lot of journalists self-censor themselves and don't really speak about what happened. However, social media is a different thing, and the internet in general is a different thing. And a lot of members of the Muslim Brotherhood, but not just them, I mean, just normal Egyptian citizens, pro-democracy activists, and also non-Egyptian organizations, including Human Rights Watch, have done their work, and we are publishing our findings online. All those things are accessible to the Egyptian public. So I don't think that they really don't know what's going on.
Do you ever get any response from the Egyptian government, or has it become very difficult for Human Rights Watch to work in the country? Because I remember your report on Rabat was one of the first big ones to come out, and it was a very thorough report with photographs, figures. It was very thoroughly done. How easy or difficult is it to do work in Egypt right now as Human Rights Watch?
Oh well, it's just impossible to go there. I mean, officially, we've requested meetings many times. They never answer. We've sent questionnaires to the authorities to answer our questions ahead of reports that we produced. They never answered to them as well. Our office in Cairo was closed in 2014. You're right. We were able to go to on the field to do that that report on Rabaa about a year after the event. But then when our executive director, Ken Roth, and our MENA director, Sarah Lee Whitson, went there to present the report, they were expelled from the airport. And since then, we haven't been able to maintain any sort of official presence in Egypt. And we also have a couple lawsuits against us.
Yeah, so it's tough times ahead.
I'm afraid so. But of course, we will not stop doing our work. And as you see, we continue producing reports and various types of documentation on Egypt, thanks to the contacts we have there, and thanks to the fact that, I mean, we have a network that has been established for decades, and that we can count on a lot of people who defend human rights in Egypt.
Ahmed Ben Kemsi, Communications and Advocacy Director, Middle East and North Africa for Human Rights Watch. Thanks for chatting to us on the anniversary of the Rabaa Adawiya massacre in Cairo. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Drive Time 91.3. Always on the cutting edge.